I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is Business Wise. Our guests today are Gary Dawson. Gary is the Executive Director for the Reuse Centers. And we also have with us Terry Baxter, who's with the Reuse Centers. And Gary, you have now created three reuse centers, Northern Kentucky and over in Cincinnati. And I'd never heard of the reuse centers until this came across my desk. Maybe you can share what that's all about.
We're a very, very well-kept secret. We don't have a huge budget for marketing. Most of it is by word of mouth. I've been a rehabber for many years, so I was introduced to a ReStore several years ago, and I saw quality building materials that were used that I could incorporate into my rehab at a fraction of the price of a box store. And I said, this is so cool. We need this in beautiful Covington, Kentucky. So that we created that about 5 years ago now.
And so at the reuse center, typically you take in things like kitchen cabinets, appliances, things left over when someone remodels their home or their building.
Right. That's a major part of the donations that we receive from individuals and from businesses that are doing rehabs. Maybe you're tired of your cabinets, but somebody else who can't afford those would love to have them. They can get them from us for a fraction of the price that they would pay at a store.
And the proceeds from this not-for-profit go to help people coming out of jail.
Yes, we have Reset Ministries. We work with guys coming out of prison, coming out of jail, or guys who are just saying, I'm not on the right track. I need to create some benchmarks in my life. And we have a two-year program, 8-bedroom home in Newport that we work with guys. And that's been a real joy of this. It's fun selling bricks and windows, but to see lives reused, that's more important to us than the materials.
And the name Reset, I guess, comes from that. They're just trying to start over?
Hitting that button. These are people who have had that aha moment that has said, you know what? I'm tired of being on this cycle. I need to get off of it.
And Terry, that's where you come in, because you've recently spent 6 or 7 years in prison this time, and you actually had another time in prison prior to that. You are part of the Reset Center now.
We have a house that is made up of 8 men. Actually, the capacity is 10, but we're at 8 right now.
And I guess, to me, if somebody listening today, they might say, Terry's been in jail for 12 years. What's that have to do with me? But it has a lot to do with anyone listening, because funds that go to pay for people in jail come right out of our taxes. So to the extent that we can help people not go to jail or stay out of jail once they've been released, that is a big economic indicator and factor for people here in our region.
I'd say that 9 out of 10 homes, families, can say at least one person in their life, whether it be in their family, whether it be a friend, drugs or alcohol or something like that has touched their family. It is a major problem. I'm 37 years old, 12 years in prison. I've had no children because of my constant problems. So I was blessed by meeting Gary and his son. I sure didn't want to do it, but it's been a lot of hard work, and I'm so thankful to be where I'm at today.
Well, what would you say was the turning point or the aha moment that you told yourself when you got out of prison this last time that I'm just not going to go back, I'm going to take action?
I got on my knees. Instead of begging God to just get me out of it, I said, you know what, God, I don't know how to do this. I'm kind of a dumb hillbilly. Can you just, help me out? Every day he did. I've continued to grow. I'm just very thankful today. So.
Gary, before we go, if people listening would like to learn more about the Reuse Center, would like to make a donation to the Reuse Center, what's your website or your contact information?
The website is www.reusecenters.org.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is BusinessWise. Today, our guests are Gary Dawson. Gary is the Executive Director for Reuse Centers, and Terry Baxter, who is with Reset Ministries and, I guess, Reuse Centers as well. Gentlemen, maybe you can tell me just a little bit about what Reuse Centers does.
Our primary focus is to keep all construction materials that we can from the waste stream. There are a lot of good materials out there that might be dinged up. The box stores are very good. Lowe's, Home Depot, they provide us with materials that they can no longer sell or may become obsolete. We also take used materials from individuals who are remodeling their home. We make those available to people who want to rehab or change something in their home at a fraction of the price.
Well, and that recycling is great, but your real purpose is to help fund Reset Ministries, right?
That's correct. Reuse is the main funder for Reset Ministries, which is directed at ex-offenders, guys coming out of prison who have had that aha moment, that are looking for a new normal in their life. We put them on a 2-year path that a maximum of 2 years that will help them get their feet back on the ground with a job, with money in the bank, with a vehicle that runs.
And Terry, you have been now out of prison for about 7 months. You are part of the Reset Ministries, and actually you've taken a leadership role there. You're the manager of the house. So far, how has this changed your life?
150%. I had for sure had an aha moment at age 37, 12 years that I'd spent in prison. I was blessed enough to meet Gary and his son. I wrote him a letter and said what I was looking for, that I'd had enough. I was from the wonderful town, Muhlenberg County, and that I was going to take a gamble and leave my home behind and try to start a new life. What sold me, they wrote me a letter, and it said, if you're looking for a place to go, this is not your place. But if you're looking to drastically change your life, then we're your guys.
And so, how is that happening for you, Terry, and the other people who live there?
Honestly, I can speak for myself. I'm not going to speak for someone else. If within the 7 months that I've been out, I've definitely found work. I've started my own business. I become licensed and I become insured. I deal with problems as everybody else does. My life is normal. I didn't know anything about what normal was. So I'm just really thankful.
What is the programming? What are you doing at Reset Ministries that are so dramatically changing people's lives?
Well, we are faith-based, and we believe that there has to be a spiritual awakening. They have to be open to things of God. We're not talking religion. We're not talking denomination. We're talking about you have to understand that there's a higher power than you. And we also talk a great deal about show me your friends, and I'll tell you your future.
Absolutely.
If you get out and you go back with your old buddies who are doing drugs, you're going back to prison. But if you surround yourself with forward-thinking people, with people who are excited about life, who are excited about tomorrow, you can't help but be infected.
Who helps these folks? Do you have people from the outside? Do you have professionals? Do you have volunteers to actually come in and interact?
This is something that we've done with guys who have been there and done that. One of the main guys is a man who spent years on drugs himself. He had that awakening. And he's a great help. He understands. My son and I, Grant, we're involved because we saw this, we saw the need, and we decided we've got to do something about it. We take anything that can be reused in a home, and we will pick it up, we'll make good use out of that, we'll save it from the waste stream, and we'll change a life.
And your contact information?
You can reach me at phone, 859-291-0777. Our website is www.reusecenters.org.
Gary, Terry, thank you so much for being our guest, and good luck, Terry.
Thank you for
Business Wise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner, and Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is Business Wise. And Crystal, with tax season recently ending, I think it's time to talk about some other things that are ending in 2012, and that's a lot of tax breaks that we've become accustomed to that are due to expire at the end of this year.
And not only the breaks, Tom, but unless legislative action occurs, 2012 is the last year of a historically low tax environment. Beginning next year, income taxes are scheduled to increase, and for some in the higher brackets, they're going to be substantial tax increases.
There's a lot of talk about taxing the rich, whoever those rich people are, however you define those. But really, with these tax cuts expiring, people most of us would perceive as being rich, for instance, people who get a lot of dividend income, are going to have dramatic increases in tax rates without any legislation. The rate on dividends is scheduled to go from 15% today to 43.4% January of 2013.
And that does include the surtax for people who have incomes over $250,000 if they're married. And part of that, the 3.8% of that, is because of the health care reform legislation that was passed a couple of years ago.
Well, that's true. And that dividend tax rate will not be inflicted, if I can use that word, on everyone. But the well-to-do, the wealthy people making more than $250,000 a year, will be paying at that rate.
Well, it's really funny that you mentioned $250,000 as being wealthy, because I think a lot of small business owners who have their incomes from their business passed through under their personal returns because they're S corporations or LLCs would not say that they're wealthy. A lot of that money just stays in the business. But unfortunately, unless something changes, those people are going to be considered quote-unquote rich and be subject to these higher tax rates as well.
Many taxpayers who make less than $250,000 will be subject to higher tax rates, for instance, because of the changes in the alternative minimum tax exemption. So they'll automatically, if you're paying alternative minimum tax, you'll automatically be paying more of that in 2013.
Another credit that I know a lot of our clients have really been taking advantage of, and it's a wonderful credit to inspire innovation, is the research and development credit. That credit will go away in 2012 unless Congress acts to reinstate it.
There's another provision that not everyone takes advantage of, but some elderly people take advantage of, and that's the ability to make a charitable contribution directly from your IRA account. And the advantage of that is that it helps them avoid state taxes, because an Ohio taxpayer, for instance, doesn't get a deduction for charitable contributions. But if they make the charitable contribution directly from the IRA, it's effectively like a deduction because they don't have to take that distribution into income.
That's absolutely correct. And not only does it help in certain states like Ohio, but it also helps those individuals potentially avoid or reduce their tax on Social Security, because a lot of the items for deduction when Social Security gets taxed, it has everything to do with your adjusted gross income. So to the extent you can keep the distribution out of someone's adjusted gross income, that's a very positive thing in many different ways.
People who have children in college are going to get affected because the tuition and fees deduction is going away also after 2012.
The key here is just to keep your eyes open, keep your ears alert for legislative action that could hopefully reinstitute some of these deductions and credits. For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. Tom, I think we both are quite happy that tax filing season has come and gone for 2012, but now is absolutely the time when people should take a hard look at their 2012 planning. You know, it's very interesting to me. So many successful business owners, successful people, families take the time to put budgets together. They plan for other aspects of their business, but they don't take the time to put a solid tax reduction planning strategy in place.
Well, and if when you filed your 2011 tax return in the last couple of months, most likely, if you were surprised by either a big refund or a big balance due, then that may be an indication that you don't do enough planning. And now is really the time to start planning for 2012.
You know, I think most experts think that taxes are going nowhere but up. Now, the question is, are they going to go up in 2013? Or are they going to go up dramatically in 2014? There's probably not a doubt they're going up. So this is absolutely the time in 2012 to take advantage of strategies that can save you money over the next several years.
Well, many people would say it's not a matter of if they're going up in 2012 or 2013, but they're going up in 2012 and probably going up again in 2013. So certainly tax rates for most people will be higher in the future than they are this year.
There's so much conversation about tax on the wealthy and the Buffett rule, but unfortunately, what doesn't get spoken about oftentimes is the elimination or the expiration of the so-called Bush tax cuts. It's been around now for almost a decade. It's really going to affect many middle-income taxpayers as well.
Right. If all those cuts go away, then most people who pay alternative minimum tax, and there's 25 or 30 million taxpayers that do that, I think, their alternative minimum tax will go up.
Not only that, but if you were able to take tuition and fees deductions for your children who were in college and your income was at the level where you could still do that because that deduction is phased out for higher earners, that is going away in terms of the ability to deduct that unless it gets reinstated by Congress.
Well, from a proactive standpoint, I think what you have to do is look at how you're spending and investing your money.
We know that for 2012, capital gains tax rates for long-term capital gains is 15%. If you have any capital gains that it makes sense to harvest, to take advantage of that low rate, you should start looking at your portfolios now as opposed to trying to make hasty decisions at the end of the year. That would be one very important thing I think people should consider.
You also have to look at your retirement planning. How much money are you putting into retirement plans? While tax rates will likely go up in the future and your benefit of those deductions will be even greater, I think it's also important to maximize your deductions and get that tax deferral for as long a period of time as possible.
The best tax deduction that you can get, at least in my mind, is one where you can take a deduction for money that you put away for your own retirement. It just makes all kinds of sense. The 401k elective deferral is now $17,000 for people under the age of 50. So again, if you're not maximizing your 401k contributions, that makes a lot of sense. The last point I want to mention, we have a gift this year in terms of how much that people can actually shift wealth. This year you can give $5 million. There's all kinds of strategies that you may want to think about. I think most experts think that that limitation's coming down. The key here is just to be proactive, plan to reduce your overall tax bill. For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is Matt Davis. Matt is the Vice President of Governmental Affairs for the Cincinnati USA Regional Chamber. And I know how passionate you are about the importance of making a difference here in our community related to governmental issues.
The reason that the chamber gets involved in politics, gets involved in government issues is because our members are the ones who drive the economy. They're the ones who create the jobs. And if we want to see our economy flourish, we want to create business, and we want to bring families to our region, we need to make sure that we have policies that allow those small and large businesses to be able to grow and flourish. So we need to be in the, we, the business community, really needs to be in the game.
Well, Matt, virtually every law affects businesses in some way, either
sure,
positively or negatively. But I'm sure you've identified some key issues that you really focus on in terms of your efforts. What are some of those issues?
This year, we're focusing our efforts on transportation and infrastructure because businesses need to move people and commerce from point A to point B. Our infrastructure is crumbling. We don't invest enough in it. In fact, China invests 9% of its GDP in infrastructure. We invest about 1.5% of our nation's GDP in infrastructure. So we need to invest more so we can grow jobs. Number two is workforce development. In Ohio, Governor Kasich has been quoted as saying we have 80,000 unfilled jobs in Ohio right now. That's a real problem. So we need to figure out the best way to better link businesses with universities and schools and K through 12 and other training institutions so that we can fill the short-term needs. Those are those 80,000 jobs we have right now, but then also build a long-term pipeline to make sure that we are training for the skills and jobs of tomorrow.
How do you go about gathering the people around you and involved with the chamber to really see some action come out of these ideas?
It takes a tremendous amount of staff time to spend meeting with members to sit down and talk about what are the things that you're thinking about every day? What are the things that we as the chamber should be thinking about every day? What are the things that affect your business? What's getting in the way of you being able to keep the lights on or hire that extra person? So we do a lot of work face-to-face meeting with our members, but then also gathering them in groups around specific issues or bringing elected officials in at different levels of government to really put a face to that issue.
And well, you not only bring officials in, but you actually go and meet with them in Columbus and Washington as well.
Just had a very busy month of March. We went to Columbus and Washington, D.C., took approximately 90 chamber members, business leaders, community leaders as well, to, again, make sure that Cincinnati region is engaged and in the game in Washington and Columbus. It's much more compelling to have a local business owner or community leader giving that story.
Matt, if people would like to learn more about some of the issues and how they can get involved, what's the website or contact information?
For more information on all the work that the chamber does, I would suggest going to www.cincinnatichamber.com, or for specifically our advocacy piece, go to cincinnatiusavotes.com.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is Matt Davis. Matt is the Vice President of Government Affairs for the Cincinnati USA Regional Chamber. Recently took a couple of delegations to Washington and Columbus, respectively, to meet with legislators. What were some of the outcomes?
Well, I think on the outcome side, we were certainly able to make our voice heard on our key issues of transportation, workforce development, and then tax and regulatory, make sure we have a competitive tax and regulatory climate. As far as legislative outcomes, I don't know that you'll see a lot, particularly in Washington. I think things will certainly slow down over the next couple months as we get ready for the election season. We went to Columbus. There, the governor has introduced his mid-biennium review, which is a top-to-bottom look at the state's budget. And we had some opportunities to play a role in crafting some pieces of that. So we're happy with that. But I think even once that exercise is completed, I think you'll see Columbus sort of slowing down as well as we prepare for the November election.
The chamber looks at business issues, things that need to occur here in our state and our region to make business easier and more profitable. That's a big role for the chamber.
It absolutely is, and it's also a delicate task too, because we're large organizations. We have large and small members that cover a number of different issues, and we don't aren't necessarily always on the same side of an issue. So we have to make sure that we take the time to really go out and canvass our members and figure out where they are on an issue. And then at the end of the day, we feel like we can go to sleep at night. We can sleep soundly at night knowing that we've acted in the best interest of the overall majority. So yes, we certainly take the opportunity to talk to our members so that we can be that voice and make sure that we're speaking for our members. Also, what we like to do through our program of work, not only just try to build a consensus within our group and educate our members on what's going on, but also educate them. So to your point about not having the resources all the time to be able to have an internal lobbyist, to be able to do some of those things on your own in the future, mm-hmm. By learning how to meet with electeds and work on those issues.
Well, I mean, what the issues are. What's occurring right now that could potentially impact your business and you individually going down the road?
That's right. I mean, as particularly in small business, you spend enough time just, again, trying to keep the lights on. You don't always have time to pay attention to the things that I think about every day.
Well, one issue that I think most of your constituents would agree on is the transportation issue and particularly the Brent Spence Bridge replacement. Do you think you'll see much progress on that in terms of funding?
Well, at the federal level, it was disappointing to see that we weren't able to get a long-term bill passed this year, but there's a short-term extension. What that means for us at the local level is that we have to be creative in how we come up with funds.
The whole conversation of, quote, tolls was not even up for discussion.
Mm-hmm. It was not up for discussion. Where our position is on it, we don't necessarily support tolls, but we do think that given the fact that federal government does not have enough money to fund these large projects, we have to be able to have everything on the table to figure out how to best complete them.
So, Matt, if someone listening would like more information, what the issues are, get involved, let them know their opinion, how can they reach you?
They can reach us at www.cincinnatichamber.com. And if they want to get involved in our advocacy efforts, we'd recommend they visit www.cincinnatiusavotes.com.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is Kevin Finn. Kevin is the executive director for the nonprofit organization Strategies to End Homelessness. There are so many different myths, I think, or perceptions of people regarding those that are homeless. Some people might say it's their own fault. Just go get a job. They think that everyone that's homeless may have an alcohol, drug, abuse problem, mental illness. But there are a lot of people who are homeless that it's purely an economical thing, isn't it?
Yes. If you do the math on what somebody working full-time would make in a minimum wage job, it's very easy to see how they could end up spending 60, 70% of their income to cover nothing but their housing expenses. But then oftentimes in such jobs, they don't get paid sick leave, they don't get paid time off if something happens. So the first time they become ill or something like that, miss a paycheck, all of a sudden they're behind because they're spending so much of their money just on the housing, and they end up losing their housing for strictly economic reasons. They also don't get benefits a lot of times at those jobs that would help with the kind of situations that put them behind.
How do you try to help people that are in that situation? In other words, they're maybe still have their housing but are about to lose it. They've suffered either a job loss, you know, hours cut or whatever, where they can't make ends meet anymore. How do you provide help to them?
Well, the money that was provided through the stimulus package for homelessness prevention allows us to preserve someone's housing, stabilize them, and also provide them with services for generally about 3 months, with a goal of allowing them to get back on their feet so that they'll be stable long term. Those resources from the stimulus package run through this July, and there will be ongoing funding to continue doing the same, but at a greatly reduced level. So in the future, there will be fewer households that we are able to give that kind of assistance to.
From your perspective, how do you fix this? I mean, what should we be doing as a society to help people who are the working poor, who just can't make ends meet? How do you fix this?
Well, I think the place to start, and this is where we sort of spend our time every day, is to try to make sure that we are making the best possible use of the resources that are available, that homelessness prevention dollars are going to the people who truly were most likely to end up being homeless, and that we don't waste those resources on people who were never going to be homeless to begin with, because maybe their family or other people were going to be able to step in and help them if need be. Also, we need to make sure that the programs that are being funded to serve people who are already homeless are generating the outcome that we are shooting for, and that one outcome is that we are turning homeless people into formerly homeless people.
And some of that, I assume, is helping them. Those people who do have mental illnesses or drug or alcohol addictions, you try to help them with those needs as well?
We try to connect them to the kind of services that would allow them to be stable for years into the future. And for many people, that might be mental health services, it might be substance abuse treatment services, but it also might be helping people who don't have those kind of issues just find stable employment that will support them and their families into the future.
Kevin, if people listening or someone listening would like more information, how can they reach your organization?
I think the easiest way to find all of our contact information would be just be to go to our website, which is strategiestoendhomelessness.org.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is Kevin Finn. Kevin is the executive director of the nonprofit organization Strategies to End Homelessness. You work with homeless people all the time. Who is, I guess I should say, the average homeless person?
The average homeless person in our community would be a single adult. More homeless people are male than female, so I guess you would say a single adult male. There's also a disproportionate amount of African Americans represented in our homeless community, so an African American male.
What causes, or is there any one or two specific reasons that cause these people to become homeless?
The reasons why people become homeless are as unique as the number of homeless people. There are all sorts of factors that play into it. The most strategic way to address the problem, though, is sort of one thing, and that would be prevention.
That's what your organization focuses on, correct? You spend a great deal of time and energy and resources helping people.
Currently, yes. Up until 2.5 years ago, there weren't really any resources available for prevention. So it's somewhat new, which is sort of sad to say.
But highly successful.
Yes.
Talk about that.
Well, we partner with organizations that provide 3 months of case management to households at the same time as we provide them with up to $2,500 in financial assistance to stabilize their housing, and we have a 97% success rate in doing that. Now, it is very easy to document that it costs a whole lot more than $2,500 to get people back into housing after they have already become homeless, so really prevention is the most cost-effective way to come at the issue, regardless of what the reason is that the person was at risk.
Well, you know, Tom and I are CPAs, right? And I know you don't have to be a CPA to figure that out. $2,500 if...
Right, if a social worker can figure that out.
So I guess having said that, then as a society, what should be done from your point of view to help continue this prevention?
Well, what I would personally like to see would just be that existing funding be repurposed toward prevention. So we oversee about $13 million a year in federal funding to serve the homeless. Only $1 million of that is eligible to be used for prevention. The other $12 million can only be spent on people who are already homeless. If those ratios of dollars could be changed around and we could do more prevention, then I think we could really make a dent in the issue.
It's sort of like the healthcare system for the same population. I mean, all the money gets spent at the emergency room instead of on the prevention side.
If it was spent on prevention, we'd see a lot fewer people in the emergency room. And really, the emergency shelter in the street, that's the emergency room of homelessness.
If you're spending $1 million a year on prevention, but $12 or $13 million a year to support people that have already been homeless, what am I missing here? Why is this such a difficult conversation to make people understand?
The largest sources of funding for homeless services is really very little local money that goes into funding. It's primarily federal dollars, and those are all strings that are attached to those dollars by the federal government. So that is really where the change would have to happen in order to repurpose those dollars.
Well, and I suspect it's a lot easier to get charitable organizations involved with someone who's already homeless. It's not as an acute...
Well, people who are already homeless, they're right there. You can see them.
Right.
People who are at risk of becoming homeless are more difficult to find. If we had the resources to serve them, I'm sure we could also have an easier time finding them.
So if someone listening would like to get your services, they are concerned that they may end up losing their home or becoming homeless, how can they find you?
The easiest way is to call the Central Access Point, or CAP line, as it's called. That number is 513-381-SAFE.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is Jamie Gertzen. Jamie is the president and the CEO of Apollo Plumbing, Heating, and Cooling. And you have done a wonderful job in really distinguishing Apollo's name in what I perceive to be a very crowded industry. Let's talk about how you've done that and what you can share with others that's listening on how they can distinguish their company.
If you look at a three-hour radius, there are 694 competitors that we compete against within a three-hour radius of Cincinnati. The key element is people. We're in a people-to-people business, not a business-to-a-business or a business-to-consumer. So the frontline folks that you have working for you are the key element to that success. So if you were to look at a fishbowl and you put all those goldfish in that bowl, they all look the same and act the same. So the real question is, how do you get sort of a brand differentiator? So we look at ways to do things like create incentive contests. But you can't do an incentive contest every week because it basically creates a lead lag effect where people get pretty tired of it. So,
well, let's talk about that. So incentive contests. Now, what kind of incentive contests?
When we think about incentive, we think about holistic incentives. And we think about, how do you incentivize somebody personally, better family members, better business people, as well as better community organizers or people that get engaged in their community. So we do things like, we'll build a contest around multiple structures so everybody in the organization can win. So whether it's a trip to Key West, whether it's a cash reward, whether it's a gift card to Kroger's, I've ridden a horse in before.
Well, I was going to say, I've heard some stories about you. Why do you think that kind of activity and behavior works with employees?
So in my experience, having worked for other people in my life, is that what inevitably happens when the owner or boss wants to get you motivated, he stands in front of the room and tells you what you need to do. And it's blah, 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 blah. So what I tend to do is say, well, let's get on a horse in Norwood and let's ride a horse in holding a real live rooster and dress up like a cowboy. And what happens is you create a level of engagement, because if you're willing to risk yourself for the passion of what you do, typically what will happen is you get some people that are really into it. And then the people that aren't typically don't stick around. My favorite one, though, is that in Christmas, I dress up like Santa, dressed up as a leprechaun.
Oh, that would be cute.
Yeah, it's kind of a six foot three, 250-pound guy.
I was going to say, do they have leprechaun outfits that size?
Right. We have a mascot right now called Gritty. It's a rooster, and it's a yard ornament, and we just take it around the city and take pictures of it and send it out at random times, and whoever guesses right. We had a Peppy the Leppy, which was like a garden gnome that looked like a leprechaun. In the issue, the key word is fun. So most people think about work that it's not fun. And so in the heating, air conditioning, plumbing business, people call us because they have problems. And so the problem, if you're a technician in the field or a frontline representative, you're dealing with people under stressful situations. So how do we lighten it up? So it's all about, I think, collaboration of leadership. So leadership is at every level in your organization, whether you realize it or not. And if you look at organizations that are high performing, they are cause-based organizations. There's organizations like Zappos. So how does it work when a guy pays somebody $2,500 to not work there? You can train 2 weeks, I'll pay you $2,000 or $2,500 to leave. Or organizations like Apple. Why does Apple work? Or what Dunhubby does for Kroger's. There is this belief or a cause for what you're doing that, quite frankly, makes pay the most irrelevant thing of the process.
Jamie, if people would like more information about Apollo, what's your contact information?
ApolloHome.com is our website, and 271-3600.
That's a 513 area code. For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is BusinessWise. Today, our guest is Jamie Gertzen, who is the president and CEO of Apollo. And you were our guest yesterday, and you mentioned that Zappos, for instance, pays people $2,500 to leave. You know, they train them for 2 weeks, and then they offer them $2,500 to leave. Explain the thinking behind that.
Well, I think it's interesting. I think it's $2,500, it could be two. But first, when you hear that as a leader, you think it's an urban legend. But when you really look at it, what we're asking, or when we look at that as in theory, is the leader of that business is saying is, I'd rather pay you to leave than to see you as the walking dead. In other words, if you're not going to contribute to our organization, let me pay you to leave now. Thank you for your time. And so he's saying, if money is the only motivator on why you're here, that's not enough. You got to have, in a customer relation business like they're in, or like we're in, you have to have the first and foremost, the core value of you like to serve people. You have to be empathetic.
But the key is, Jamie, how do you find those people? Where do you get those people?
I think the way you do that is you have to take a very scientific approach to understand what behaviors drive individuals who are successful within your culture to be successful with your member or your customer. And so that is really a time that's a little bit scientific, but there's some art to it too. And so the first thing that starts is the why. So why does the owner or the leader of the business want to do that? Because if the head of the fish stinks, so does the rest of it. So if we look at it and we say, if you want a really great organization, the real question is, are you the right leader to lead it? So do you have enough courage to say, well, maybe I'm not? And if you are, then do you have enough courage to make the changes that are needed? Because there's a little bit of faith in all this stuff, right?
There is. And you've done some really interesting, what I like to say, fun things to change the culture or make it even a better culture.
Let me tell you quickly how it started. So I was in Boston at a master's program. And I heard a guy speak from a country or a company in Vancouver. And this individual talked about how he had been on a business trip for 3 weeks, came back, pulled in the parking garage. An employee, he saw this employee, waved to the employee. The employee didn't wave back. In fact, she ran into the office so he wouldn't see her. And he said, at that moment, I showed up at the office, hadn't been there for 3 weeks. And if you've never been in, if you've been gone for a couple weeks, come back, you can instantly tell if it's a good place or a bad place to work. You just know how it smells, right? And it, if it stinks, you know it. So he and his business partner about 2 hours later left and sat down at Denny's for 4 hours and talked about why they did it, why were they in this business and all these things. So I took that story to heart because I felt like when I left my business to go to this class, I was happy we were had great customer satisfaction. We had good people, but we weren't great. And we could have stayed a B company in terms of our culture and who we were, but I decided that if we're going to do this, we're going to do it, and we're going to do it right. So we decided to inject a little fun and got crazy and did things like dressing up like leprechauns and cowboys and, you know.
Well, how's this resulted in bottom line? Do you see a change in your financials as a result of this?
Yeah. So 2011 was our best financial year from a top line, bottom line, gross margin perspective. 2012 is on a ripping pace. You know, coming out of first quarter, we actually are in a very, very strong growth position.
What about motivation? Do you see a change in your employees' attitudes?
We've seen our turnover actually decrease close to 50% from where it was last year. We look at that, and what impresses us most about it is the quality of the hires is changing because A people like A people. And so we're seeing an elevation of staff, which elevates culture. And it's like the flywheel effect Jim Collins talks about. It's good for business, good for customers.
Jamie Gertzen, president of Apollo. If people want information about Apollo,
ApolloHome.com and 513-271-3600.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.